All right, on this episode of Bouts Talkin' Bouts, excited to be talking to legendary UFC play-by-play voice over the course of many years. You've also heard him over multiple years on Bellator MMA, but nowadays a prominent voice in bare-knuckle boxing as part of the BYB Extreme events. I am talking to Mike Goldberg. How's your day going so far, man?
You know, it's another crazy day in the world of combat sports, Dylan, but always a good day. Someone told me decades ago, a guy named Tom Verado, when I had my first internship at Channel 5 in Cincinnati, that sports is the toy department of life. So even when it's a stressful day, I have to remember I am blessed to work in the toy department of life.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that latest toy in the proverbial department, like the bare-knuckle boxing there. Like, when was the first moment you kind of saw bare-knuckle boxing, like even outside of the localized, like, BYB Extreme umbrella? Like, what was the, I guess, initial reaction seeing, like, bare-knuckle boxing as it picks up steam domestically?
You know, the big moment that it was really brought to the forefront to my attention and in my mind was when Paige VanZant got involved. I was working for Bellator then. Austin Vanderford, her husband, obviously a top contender, just had a great title fight with Gegard Mousasi in Bellator. And Paige and Scott Coker had a previous relationship. So we were all pretty positive that Paige VanZant would join the Bellator roster. All of a sudden, BKFC comes in with this incredible offer for Paige, which I am extremely happy for her and Austin because they're both wonderful human beings. And I went, all right, okay, Paige is going to do this. And that really focused me in on taking it in a hole, if you will, Dylan. Before that, you got guys like Kendall Grove and Joey Beltran and the crippler, Chris Leben. I mean, I can think back to Colin Anderson Silva, Chris Leben. Chael always talks about how Chris used to foot stomp in practice. And I'd always say, well, what'd you do? That's 30 in practice. And Chael would have foot stomp back. But I really zoned in on that sport when Paige made her debut. And it was during that time, or shortly thereafter, that Bellator made the move to Showtime Network, which meant that Mauro was already there, Mauro Ranallo, full-time. And unfortunately, I wouldn't continue to be calling the Bellator fights on a regular basis. If we were to stay at CBS Sports Network, you know, I'd be getting ready with Big John to go to Hawaii. That said, it opened up an avenue that I'm even more excited about in a lot of ways because it's fresh, it's new, and it's a form of combat sports, which is the oldest form, as you know, Dylan, but it's the new craze. It's the new rage. It's the new place to go. And Mike Vasquez, the owner of BYB Extreme, through a couple of connections, found out that I would be available or could be available, invited me down to a show. It was May of last year. We hit it off brilliantly, and I started shortly thereafter, and it's an absolute blast. It's an absolute blast. The athletes are of the same code of ethics that I have found throughout martial arts for the past 2.5 decades. They leave it all inside the trigon, and I get to say, it is all over just like that, pretty much every fight. So that part of it is very appealing as well.
I think it would be enjoyable, too, and drawing parallels to, like, when you were in the UFC during the SEG days, just in as far as how there seems to be that, like, evolutionary growth, like, seemingly on an event-to-event basis. Have you noticed that so far, even, just, like, these different wrinkles being added to different guys' games, seemingly on that event-to-event basis?
No question at all, Dylan, and that's a great insight, and one that people have mentioned before. But you're bang on, man. You're bang on. And when I look back on my journey during the UFC and the early days with SEG, it was always a post-fight beer or two with my best bud, who we lost a couple of years ago, way too young, my producer, Bruce Connell, wondering, are we going to have a next show? Where might that next show be? Are we coming back to Lake Charles, Louisiana, and having every meal at the Cracker Barrel again? Is that what is still to come? And so, yes, to see the transition and the acceptance of the sport go through that same journey, if you will, go along that same path as mixed martial arts did many years ago, and then, hey, people should be thanking Bob Myrowitz every single day because Bob Margolowitz did not keep the UFC alive at that time. And there was money coming out of his pocket every single show. The handoff to Frank and Lorenzo would have never happened. And then Frank and Lorenzo took it along with Dana. They brought in Mark Ratner. And instead of running away from regulation, they embraced regulation. And that's what we're doing with Bare Knuckle, and especially with BYB Extreme. So that comparison, Dylan, is absolutely 100% right on.
Yeah, and I appreciate the insights for sure. And I guess kind of derivative of that sort of thought, because like you've done interviews where you talk about the early UFC days and like John McCarthy putting you in submissions backstage to kind of show you like the intricacies of the sport and all that good stuff. Like, are there any curious like BYB kind of stories? Like, obviously someone's not going to hit you with a bare fist, but just any stories that you think with time will kind of indicate like the growth of the sport, and just, I guess, for like a fun kind of like behind the scenes sort of story, because I think there would be instances like that.
Absolutely. I mean, it was really humbling and flattering, but, you know, I go to that first show, and Mike Vasquez is a wonderful human being. Mel Valenzuela, our matchmaker, I've known Mel, and he kind of set up the connection with Mike. But I had been around Dada a lot. I had called Timbo's fights, may he rest in peace. I called Baby Slice's fights. But it was the first time I met Dada. And he's a big dude, Dylan, as you know. Big dude with the mohawk, huge presence. And he turned and looked at me, Dylan. He was like, "What?" And he's co-founder. "What are you doing here? Goldie, my man. Oh, my God, I can't believe you're here. Can I get a picture? What a pleasure to be." And I'm going, wow, okay. Not that I didn't expect him to be super cool. Not that I didn't know there are a lot of gentle giants like he is and many others out there, but it was just, it was so rewarding to me to have a guy like Dada 5000, even though we hadn't met before, not only be fired up at just the fact I was in attendance, Dylan, but the fact that, oh, Mike's trying to get you on board to be our voice? You got to be kidding me. If it's up to me, it's done right now. And so that was my first meeting with Dada 5000, and we immediately hit it off. We have the same goals in mind. We have the same hopes in mind. And Dada is a perfect example of starting, if you will, with the backyard fights in an SEG mode, and now we want to move towards the acceptance and the mainstream. Because really, bare knuckle is the oldest form of combat sports. It's just the new age thing and the thing everybody wants to see. That and JD Burns. This kid JD Burns, purple hair, tattooed all over the place. I've seen purple hair and tattoos. You know, yeah. I've been around the UFC for a long time in Bellator. Super nice dude. Nicest guy ever. Tells me about a story about his motivation in a conversation in a seminar with the late Robert Fallis. Dylan, it's so sad when we keep saying the late, isn't it? It's such a fragile world out there, you know, and losing Robert was, you know, he's one of the mainstays of the sport. But JD's always got a smile on his face, Dylan. And he was the first fight that night, and he got knocked down, blood flying all over the place. He keeps getting up with the purple hairs, now purple and red, you know, Elvis Sinisek style back in the day. More red than purple. And he got knocked down about six times. He's all bloodied up, and he wins the fight. And I'm like, okay, that young man right there is a bare knuckle fighter. Now, you can get up in boxing the same way, MMA, but he just epitomized in about a 3-minute span what BYB, what the Trigon demands and really what the Trigon forces its competitors to do, and that is confront each other, but also the toughness and the heart and courage of a bare knuckle fighter. And so JD became my guy. Even though he's all bloodied up and sweaty, gave him a big hug, gave him a knuckles afterwards, and you know, soon thereafter he fought for the title a month or so ago and lost to Jose Fernandez, but a great fight there as well. So those would be my two. So I guess it's the red hair and the purple hair are the two that have stuck out with me the most so far, Dylan.
Yeah, and I love that. But also, like, in kind of going back to like what you were saying about Dada's reaction and kind of your reaction thereafter, I think that sort of illustrates a common thread in your career. It's almost like you're taken aback by the fact that people are like, oh, you're Mike Goldberg, you have such a huge profile in the sport. But even with, like, when you came to Bellator, I'd heard interviews where you were like, hey, I'm the new guy here, I want to learn, I want to earn my keep here, as it were. Like, how much utility to your career as, like, a combat sports voice is having that sort of mentality?
Well, that's my hockey mentality. That's my hockey DNA, Dylan. And, you know, even if you're Wayne Gretzky and you're traded to the LA Kings, and I know that's the, like, I'm not Gretz, but yeah. In that example, when a big player gets traded to another team, you're supposed to walk into that locker room in the very early stages, Brendan Shanahan to the Red Wings, and act like a guest. You're a guest. Yes, everybody in that room knows what you've done in the past. Everybody in that room knows what you can bring to the team. But let them know it. Let them experience it. Let them acknowledge it. Let them enjoy it. You don't have to come bouncing through like you're all this and that. You did the UFC. You're the soundtrack with Rogan. You're the man, Goldie. That all warms my heart. It all warms my heart. And I've worked very hard to have people feel that way about me. But that's not the way I was raised. It's not the way I was brought up. And again, I'm a hockey player. And we have a code where we're about team. We're about building a product. We're about family. And we're about entering new rooms as a guest. I did the same exact thing at Bellator, Dylan. And I was asked about this the other day, about Jimmy Smith making the transition to professional wrestling, to WWE. And I said, I could not be happier for my friend Jimmy Smith. Because when I walked in and did my first Bellator, Jimmy had been there forever. Poor man's Rogan. We'd all like to be a poor man's Rogan, right? Like, okay, 100 million, I'll be a poor man. Dylan, you take 10, I'll take 10. We'll both be poor men Rogan.
Yeah.
I said to Jimmy right away, I said, Jimmy, this is your turf, bro. He goes, Goldie, I've been watching, you're the man. I said, Jimmy, this is your show. We're going to do it together. I'm not coming in any different than anybody else. And immediately Jimmy and I connected because of that. And that's my mentality. So yeah, perhaps that's why I get that reaction from people so often, because if you're not around tooting your own horn, it gives other people the opportunity to pat you in the back and thank you for your work over the years.
Yeah, great insights for sure. And it's kind of curious, some of the names you mentioned there, like Jimmy Smith and even a bit earlier, Paige VanZant, concurrently being with, yeah, you know, BKFC and AEW and all that. I think you'd be a great fit at AEW. It seems like that's something you'd be interested in. Like, would you be looking to concurrently, you know, do something like that? Because it seems like you have, like, a lengthy history with that.
You know, I have a smile on my face because I did a podcast with a couple guys from the UK, a couple from Australia. Both of them brought up the 2005 offer from the WWE.
Yeah.
And if I would do that today. So I smile because, Dylan, you say the same thing. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's entertainment. I was absolutely flattered and humbled when I had the offer back in 2005. I was just on a journey with a family that was run by Frank and Lorenzo. I had a partner in Joe that was my true broadcast partner, my powerful partner, and I wanted to stay on that ship. It had nothing to do with anything else. WWE, they were the king. Their production is, you know, second to none. AEW, I've joked with Jake Hager. Jake Hager, a couple of times, Dylan, has had me do things in the phone, like, coming up next, it's all over. And all of a sudden, I've got AEW on in the background, and I hear myself. And I text Jake. I'm like, hey, do I get, a beer or something at least, bro? Like,
yeah,
you know, how about a little something, something? But, yeah, if they came calling, if someone came knocking, I would absolutely be interested and do my homework and walk in as a guest and try to bring the excitement and energy that I hope a lot of fans around the world feel that I bring to anything that I broadcast. I just want to be surrounded by excitement. I want to be surrounded by passionate fans because that's the most enjoyable audience to broadcast to. And I want to work with good people. So if you can find those three, as you know, Dylan, it's not everywhere that you get that. But at this point, if I can get a couple of those, I'll be extremely happy because I don't have a shallow end of the pool in anything I do. I dive head first, and I just hope that I don't bust my neck on the way down because you asked me to be part of it, and I'm going to give you everything I have.
Yeah, and I'm sure you picked up some invaluable broadcast tips over the years in a pro wrestling context, having some beers with Mean Gene Okerlund at like Blueberry Hill in Sarasota and all.
Oh, you know that one. Yeah. Blueberry Hill. Yeah, Mean Gene. I love that man. And I was a devoted fan back then. And I was in college. I remember gathering at my buddy's house. I don't know if we, $5 each, $10 each, how many kegs we had, how many TVs we put together, but we were there for WrestleMania 1, and we were watching. And what Mean Gene did in all facets of the WWE back then was just pure brilliance. I mean, especially he and Hulk. I mean, well, I'll tell you what, Mean Gene. And, you know, Gene's now my neighbor, and I'm talking to truly one of my heroes when I was a young broadcaster, because Sarasota was my first job out of school, Dylan. So I was 22, 23 years old. So not far removed from WrestleMania 1, WrestleMania 2. And Gene gave me some invaluable advice. And that was just be passionate about it, entertain, and don't fake it, bring it. And, you know, his son obviously played, I think many people know, but Todd Oberlin was on the 1984 U.S. Olympic men's hockey team. So there was that hockey background. And he was just a guy I idolized. And what a voice. What a voice. And what a character he was able to play in many different ways. And so to sit down and have him go, Goldie, you know, he's calling me by my nickname, was very, very special. Very special. I'll tell you a real quick Hulk story. So they were doing an event in Sarasota, and Terry, as it is, Terry Funk, was coming down to do some promotion. And I was all excited because I had a one-on-one as the guy at Channel 40 in Sarasota with Hulk Hogan. And Dylan, the interview was, I'd ask a question and go, well, Mike, you know, we're really excited. We're going to be here. We're going to put on a good show for Sarasota. Yeah, Macho Man and I, you know, we have our past and we're going to leave it all in the ring. And I promise we're going to. And I'm like, who is this person? Like, this is Terry. This is not Hulk. And I say to him, Dylan, I go, I got to say, Hulk, I can't believe that we are going to get through an interview and I'm not going to experience Hulkamania. And I won't go too much of a crescendo because it will blow the microphones. But he, without hesitation, he goes, I'll tell you what, me and Mike. And I jumped out of my skin. Like, I knew that was him, but he just, I'll tell you what, me and Mike. Take your vitamins. And it was amazing. It was amazing. Always a Hulk fan. Always a Mean Gene Okerlund fan. May he rest in peace. And hey, the dude was not just a sports broadcaster. He was the ultimate entertainer. And I learned a lot from just watching. And I enjoyed every single moment sitting there swapping stories with Mean Gene on Siesta Key.
Oh, yeah, true legend. I only actually had found out about that in doing my research on you. Like, I felt like I knew a fair bit about you heading into this, but I was like, oh, cool, the Mean Gene interaction is really fun for sure. Definite legend. But you were kind of talking about Jake Hager earlier, kind of like integrating some of your like known catchphrases into what he's doing. And I'm sort of curious about the machinations of a catchphrase like becoming an instantiated, established sort of thing. Like, how do you go about that? Is it like recognizing fan sentiment emerging around particular phrases you're saying? Is it more, oh, I'm going to conceptualize this catchphrase and kind of go with it a few times to see if it resonates? Like, what are the machinations of all that?
That is, first of all, that is a brilliant display of proper English that you just utilized, Dylan. that was properly said, my friend. That was beautiful. The process for me was simplified. Where are you from?
I'm from Ontario, Canada, specifically Oshawa.
Okay. From Ottawa?
No, Oshawa, yeah.
Oshawa. Okay, Oshawa. The Oshawa Generals, baby. Eric Lindros.
Let's go.
Yeah. No, I heard you a little bit. I picked up on it pretty quickly. As many know, my ex-wife is Canadian, British Columbia girl. Both my kids are dual. My daughter lives in Vancouver now. She's an actress. Between New York City and Vancouver, more Vancouver during the pandemic. My son plays hockey. I played hockey. So I've been up your way many times, my friend, and love Canada, love the culture, the fight fans. And like I said, as you can relate to even more so, I'm a hockey player. When it comes to catchphrases, or what became my catchphrases. I remember early when I was doing the NHL, and I went right to the NHL on the network, NHL on ESPN. And I mean, all of a sudden I'm working with my hero, Bill Clement, and he was my hero. When I watch TV, you know, if you're a broadcaster in general, a lot of people are watching and they're watching Madden. And Madden's the guy. Or if you're an AFC guy, you're watching Enberg and Olsen. But you're watching John Madden. Well, my John Madden was Bill Clement as far as a broadcast presence and just the polish he had. Excitement-wise, it was Thorny. I still think Gary Thorne is the man when it comes to calling a hockey game. Absolutely my favorite. And that's no disrespect to the others who are very good. But Thorne and Clement, they're the gold standard in my mind. And a lot of people will forever say Summerall and Madden are the gold standard forever. And that is because we just, you know, we have our old fuzzy blanket. And even though the new blankets are wonderful, you know, you still give a lot of love to that old fuzzy blanket. I also was in Chicago. And so I listened to Pat Foley's call and excitement a lot. And I remember there was a game I was playing around a little bit with, you know, a little bit of Thorne, a little bit of Foley, and finding my way. And afterwards, Billy really took me under his wing and is still my hero and still a friend today. And he said, what were you doing in the second period? What do you mean? What was I doing in the second period? Your voice changed. Your call changed. Like what? I go, I don't know. And I mentioned Gary and I mentioned Pat, and he said, Goldie, just be Goldie. Like, you were hired on your talents. Take from them what you like. Take from this guy and that guy, but make it your own. Don't try to be someone else. And so I learned a great lesson then. And I built my attack, if you will. And I built not catchphrases, but just my approach to broadcasting. And the one thing that always hit me was when Thorny in a big playoff game, if there's an overtime goal, it would be, Dylan, he scores! He scores! He scores! Dylan wins it in overtime! and that dramatic hit and then crowd noise was just spectacular. The one UFC, I just said, it is all over! And I went like this. And then I looked back at it, and it sounded good. And I did it again. Not forced, just came out. And people started to pick up on it immediately. An immediate attraction to the point that then shortly thereafter, as you all know, it was expected. It was, here we go, and it's all over. And they were never fabricated. They were never pre-planned. They were utilized in excitement at the spur of the moment, and then they stuck. And once I knew the fans loved it, then I wanted to give it to them as much as possible. I mean, I was so loud with here we go on broadcast. It was so funny. Lorenzo would be over here and he'd always kind of look at me through the crowd noise. Here we go. And Lorenzo would kind of look and smile and then, you know, look back the other way. I voiced the combo features, you know, Dylan, Mike, coming up next. I have no idea why I voiced it that way. Kenny Florian and I are at dinner one night. He's going, coming up next, coming up next. So the eloquent fashion in which you ask the question, I cannot give you that same eloquent or like deliriously demanding and direct answer to it because I let it evolve. And when it evolved and I knew it worked, then I stayed with it. And that is really in a microcosm. That's what Billy told me the night when he told me, don't try to be Pat Foley. Don't try to be Gary Thorne. Just be Mike Goldberg.
Yo, that must have been so satisfying to get to a point where you kind of found that voice and people see it as like such a distinct broadcast voice. But something I was wanting to ask too, just doing my research on you, because I saw you were on Cameo nowadays. Have you been getting any bizarre requests there? Because I was kind of making an inference, like looking at it, and I'm like, there's probably people reaching out to him that want to like break up with their partner with a it's all over or something like that. You getting any of that?
I do. I get a lot of that. I've had people on Twitter, you know, kind of say, you know, Goldie, I just want you to promise me one thing, that somehow you'll connect with someone in my family, and when my days on this earth are done, that you'll attend the funeral and say it's all over. And I'm like, that's just morbid, dude. Like, no. Now, if you know, if you're walking down the aisle, I might say to the dude, yo, it's all over, because that life that you knew a moment ago, it's all over, just like that. Yeah, I get that all the time. The thing I get all the time, Dylan, is, hey, Dylan is having his bachelor party. Dylan has a jiu-jitsu competition. Dylan's a huge fan. We're throwing him his 40th birthday party. Goldie, send him a message. Send him some love and use some of your Goldie-isms. You know, use virtually identical. Use his precision is precise. And I work really, I don't want to say I work really hard, because it's not hard work, but I take a lot of pride in those cameos to make it different than some dude who just sits down and goes, hey, Dylan, man, I heard it's your 40th birthday. Your 30s are all over, just like that. Thanks for the $72. Peace out. No, yeah. I'm like, hey, Dylan, it's Mike Goldberg. Great to talk to you, my friend. I just want to tell you, you're turning 40 years old. I'm 57. So I guess we're not virtually identical. But that said, my precision on that decision was precise, wasn't it? I will tell you one thing. This decade of your 30s are all over, just like that. Happy 40th, my friend. Boom. So, you know, and then I'll end it a lot with, and oh, by the way, this cameo is all over. Or here we go. 40s, here we go. Anytime it's got to do with a wedding or an engagement, I always tell the dude on cameo, I say, just learn a few words. Yes, dear, you're right. So I guess that's five, because yes, dear, you are right. Yes, dear, you are right. If you learn those five words, your success rate in your marriage goes up exponentially. And in the end of the day, you're never going to win a discussion. Let's not even call it a fight. Just give up, dude. Tap to your wife, and it'll be a lot. It'd be a lot happier house, happy wife, happy life. So I have fun with that as well. And I do tell dudes that, you know, the life that they previously knew is all over, just like yeah. that. So married man, here we go. They always ask for the Goldie-isms, much to your point. And it's cool. So I give them to them.
Yeah, well, there's such a distinct quality to them. Like, even when you were just doing that, his precision is really precise. Like, it distinctly reminded me of when I was watching that.
That was one of the dumb ones I said, but actually, it gets kind of cool. As it's grown, Dylan, it's kind of cool now, because I make fun of it and people, you know, live with it. But when I said it, it wasn't quite as eloquent as the way you asked the earlier question.
I mean, I've even done, I mean, obviously very much not to the same scale, but I've done similar like broadcast work for like regional MMA events. And it's not an easy thing. There's certain times I like run back on a video and I'm like, what was I even thinking when I said that? Like, so yeah, no, for sure.
The one I'd like to have back, because it literally was me looking at the bio, was when I talked about the Kimura and he got choked out by Kimura. And Joe goes, how do you get choked out by a Kimura? And I literally looked at like, two fights. It was a guillotine stop and it was Kimura. And I just looked at my bio saying last two fights, and I went with, and I wish I could take that back, Dylan. And instead of saying, yeah, good point, Joe, I wish I would have been witty enough at the time to go, well, Joe, you're the black belt. Why don't you tell me how you can choke somebody out via Kimura? But you know, it took me about 8 years to think, man, that would have been really funny if I could have come up with that one at the time.
No, for sure. I mean, I think anybody who's in any kind of creative medium like that has certain things where it's like, oh, that'd be good to redo it. But alas, yeah. Not the case. But you got another opportunity to have some great calls put out there in the world May 28th. There, I imagine you're excited for BYBX, Biloxi Brawl, and you're going to be pretty prominently part of all that there. A couple title fights at the top there. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring that card up. Can you kind of talk about that? And I mean, obviously a little bit out, but like, when do the preparations kind of really ramp up for that one for you?
Well, you know, they're always ongoing with conversations like we're having today. Going back to kind of my theory, there's no shallow end of the pool. So I'm always working very closely with Mike Vasquez, my boss, our owner, and our entire crew with the editing team, promotions, social media, Mel Valenzuela with the updates on the fight card and helping to voice promos and teases and different things like that. The real prep for any fight for me starts about 2 weeks out or a week out. People don't understand what it takes, and you've done it. You understand what it takes to truly be ready to go on fight night. It's much like a week of football practice for a quarterback in my job, and that is you got to be there every day. You got to be in every meeting. You got to learn the playbook. You got to have all the audibles. You have to be able to go in 18 different places in a split second, and you have to have all that ready to go. And the fun part is when you put the headset on. Now you're playing the game. The fun part is when they snap the ball, they kick it off Sunday at 1:07. Now you're in the game. Now you get to put all that hard work up to the world and do it with enthusiasm and do it with energy. So that's how I prep. I'm a prep freak, and I learned that, again, from Billy Clement. He said, Goldie, when you think you're prepared, do another half hour and then put it aside, because after that it becomes minutia and you'll just confuse yourself. And now that I think back, you might just say that somebody got choked out by Kimura. I mean, maybe that was what happened on that one. But I look forward to both title fights for two very different reasons. Tony Lopez, I mean, this dude has over 100, truly over 100 bouts combined in all forms of combat. He's been knocked out in all of those different sports. I want to say, I'd have to look at my bio to be exact, Dylan, 4 or 5 times. He's lost. But he's been finished by knockout 4 or 5 times. He comes in on 4 days' notice on our last show and puts on a clinic. Tony Lopez is another guy who defines bare-knuckle fighting. He defines any place, anywhere, anytime, and add one more to it, any style. So for Tony to be coming at this point in his career with all that experience, be able to utilize his style and potentially become BYB's first heavyweight champion, what a great story. Because if you are a combat sports fan, you know who Tony Lopez is. And then you go to the other side of it with Patty Juarez, our champ on the women's side. Patty Juarez came in. She went 7 hard rounds with Christine Stanley in the first ever inaugural women's title fight. But Patty Juarez comes from a family of boxers. Her big sister, Barbie, is widely known basically as the Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. female version of Mexican boxing. Multiple time world champion, Barbie, big sister. Little sister, Lourdes, one of our shows, Patty was fighting for the title, and Lourdes was in a fight in Mexico looking to retain her belt. So now you have the pure boxer come in and use those skills without gloves. And so far, she's been absolutely spectacular. She's been fascinating to watch because in that 22 by 22 by 22 surface, she's still able to truly show that she has a boxing pedigree with world championships throughout her family. Now she happens to have one as well. So just off the top of my head, you look at the two title fights, very different storylines, but the similar results are they win most of their fights.
Yeah, an incredible card even with just those two fights, and I presume it's going to be building up that much more as we encroach a bit closer.
I'm going to pull up and go ahead. I'm going to pull up what the latest that Mel sent me too, as we're talking here, bud, because I'm sure I'm missing a guy or two. But those two, you know, those two definitely, you know, stand out for me. Miranda Barber just fought for us a couple of weeks ago, and Charles McCarthy, Chainsaw, is not only her trainer, but like her mentor, her hero. And as you well know, he was Captain Miserable on The Ultimate Fighter. I hadn't seen Charles in forever. And big hug, big smile. And I'm standing there talking to him real quickly, and Mike Vasquez is right there. And Miranda, you know, these people know what I've done, so they're very kind. But Charles and I've known him, I called all his fights. And he looks at Mike Vasquez, he goes, "You know that guy's the man. You know you got the man." And Mike just smiled and said, "Yeah, I know. I know." So it was cool to see Miranda Barber and the success that she had. Mattia Fonda comes out of Milwaukee, comes out of Duke's camp. So he's been around the Pettis boys. He's been around Duke Rufus, the multiple-time kickboxing champion. So that one spits out on the card very quickly for me as well. And there's another female fighter on the card that is got a background in Boston and is actually trained in the olden days under my crew, Mark Delagrati. So I see this background of, you know, Crew Toy and then Crew Tong in Thailand, Crew Mark brought over the Sit Yo Tong name, Team Sit Yo Tong. And so I see somebody, you know, who trained, you know, at the place where I learned a lot of my Muay Thai in Somerville, in Massachusetts, at Mark's gym, and Crew Mark. So those backgrounds are fascinating to me as well.
Yeah, and I love the different, like, talent exchanges with, like, BKB and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, some great stuff that is being done. And I could really talk to you all day, but I want to be mindful of your presumably busy schedule. So is there anything you might want to add as a parting thought as we're wrapping up here, Mike?
Well, first and foremost is that Mike Vasquez's vision, along with Dada, is to be the place to go for bare-knuckle fighting. And the Trigon separates us from everybody else in the same fashion in which the Octagon separates the UFC from other organizations. There are other great organizations around the world in every combat fashion, in combat sports. Obviously, Bellator is a place I truly enjoy. They have a great stable of fighters. ONE Championship, some of these smaller shows are really putting on spectacular showcases of up-and-coming talent. But there's one in each place. And the Trigon is the defining presence that others do not have. And now we want to continue to build our roster and put those exciting fights together, have the confrontation that people enjoy, the highlight reel finish, and the classy competitors like J.D. Burns to showcase. But when you flip on bare knuckle and you see that triangle, you know it's BYB Extreme. And that's appealing to me, and it's growing on everyone else. That's why we have the partnership with BKB, and that's huge, because in the U.K., who doesn't love a fight? But in the U.K., who doesn't love a fight even a little bit more? So adding that to the roster as well is huge. And it's just a fun time to be involved. And our broadcast team is great. Benny Ricardo has done everything, but Benny knows his combat sports. Claudia Trejos at the desk with Dave Ryan. Dave Ryan and I go back to the 90s in ESPN hockey. And then my partner, Paulie Malignaggi. I mean, Paulie Malignaggi's breakdown of fights and fight knowledge in boxing and now bare knuckle is the best in the business. And Joe's talked about it. Joe has talked about the high level work on the air that Paulie Malignaggi brings every night. And Paulie and I have really bonded very quickly. And we're building a dynamic much like Joe and I had. We breathe off each other's enthusiasm, and we really truly are friends, and we love working together. And that comes off the screen. So for those who haven't watched Dylan, I hope they'll check us out. The Brawl in Biloxi, and they'll feel that real early, and they'll want to stick around, and they'll want to come back for many more.